If you have a Bible or a way to access your Bible today, I want to invite you to find your way to the book of Romans, in the New Testament book of Romans. Like a lot easier to find than last week's book, which was Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament. And, you know, we are joining today with literally hundreds of thousands of people asking the biggest questions that you can ever ask in life. In this whole series, you've seen the billboards everywhere, Explore God. And today we're looking at what arguably may be the greatest question of life. And it is this question. You can see it there on your message notes. You can see it there up on the screen. Is there a God? You know, and we saw the video there, kind of the pulse kind of going out on the street. What do you think the answer to that question is? Is there a God? And, you know, to be honest with you, there are some people today who say we shouldn't even have to ask that question anymore. It's 2015, and modern science has made us now know that God was just the creation of mythic people who lived a long time ago. Well, what they say is that ancient man couldn't explain the universe, and so they made up the concept of God. And modern science now answers all the questions of life. And so we don't need to ask the question anymore, is there a God? Because we now know there isn't a God. Science has the solution for it. Now, there's some people who think that. But is it true that science has made it where we no longer need to talk about God? Actually, not according to the scientists. One of the most well-known researchers and scientists in the world today is a man named Francis Collins. Francis Collins, just several years ago, did something that had never been done before. He mapped what's called the human genome, the DNA inside the cells of our body. It was the most significant scientific work that's ever been done. Francis Collins was an atheist, a scientist, a researcher. Today he's at the National Institutes of Health. He's coming up with the vaccine to Ebola and everything else. As he was doing his research, though, this atheist, Francis Collins, began to look at the sophistication and the complexity and the intelligence that he found in science. And he came to a life-changing decision. That there was no other explanation for the intelligence that we find in the world other than the fact that there must have been a creator. There must have been a designer. There must have been someone who made it all. And he wrote a best-selling, New York Times best-selling book called The Language of God, in which he describes for himself the process by which he came to realize through science that there must be a creator God. Today, he also heads up a project called Biologos. And you can go on their website and you can see all these videos from some of the top scientists around the world explaining why it is they believe that science and faith are not at odds with each other, but in fact are telling a similar story. Well, we might be surprised today to discover as we open up to the book of Romans that 2,000 years ago, a man named the Apostle Paul also believed that scientific discovery would ultimately lead to the reality of God. When he wrote his magnum opus, his major work, the book of Romans, he said in one of the most important verses of Romans, Romans 1:18, this, and you can read it there on your Bibles as well, "The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all godlessness and wickedness of people who suppress the truth. Since what may be known about God, what anybody can know about God, is plain to them. Because God has made it plain to them." Verse 20, "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities," which by the way, God is invisible, you can't see him, "his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen." The God that is invisible has been seen. And this is where he says you can see God. This invisible God can be seen. He said in his eternal power and divine nature. And we're going to unpack that in just a second. "Being understood from what has been made." So a person who studies the universe and studies creation could actually discover and find this invisible God. Paul concludes, "so that people are without excuse today." All 7 billion of us on this planet are without excuse because God has actually revealed himself. And this morning, I want to just kind of show this to you. If you got your message notes and you want to follow along with me, I just want to show you some of the ways in which God makes himself known to us. He answers the question for us, is there a God? And number one is this: God makes himself known in the natural world around us. He makes himself known in the natural world around us. This is something that we call revelation. Now, I know there's a book in the Bible by that name, but revelation means to reveal something that is invisible or not seen. And so one of the ways that we talk about God is we say, look, you can't see God. The only way we're going to know about God is if he chooses to reveal himself. And he has done that in the natural world. He's done that in general revelation. And we see it even in the Psalms. And you've experienced moments like this in your own life as you've looked up at a starry night. The psalmist was describing this. He says, "The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they reveal knowledge." But then he adds this: "They have no speech." I mean, you're not listening to the sky at night going, "Oh, wow, listen to that." It doesn't say anything. "But they don't need words," he says. "They use no words. There's no sound that's heard from them. Yet their voices go out into all the earth. Their words to the ends of the world. And in the heavens, God has pitched a tent for the sun." And so the psalmist says, look, we can look at the beauty of God's creation and his world and see that there is a God. Now, this is what Paul did in his life. He was a missionary and he would go to all these places, and sometimes he would talk to people who believed in God, and sometimes he would talk to people who didn't know who God was. On his first missionary journey, he went to modern-day Turkey. He went to a city called Lystra. And when he was there, he found that there were all these pagan people. They worshiped the gods of Zeus and Hermes. And while Paul and Barnabas were in the city, a miracle took place. A lame man began to walk who had never walked before. And the people who were living there said, "Wow, the gods have come down to earth in the form of Zeus and Hermes." And they ran and they got a bull. This is what it says in the book of Acts. They ran and got a bull and they brought it there to sacrifice it to Paul and Barnabas and to proclaim that they were the gods, Zeus and Hermes, come down to earth. And Paul says, no, we're not the gods. In fact, let me just go ahead and tell you, the gods you worship, the Greek gods, they're just a myth. The real God, he doesn't live in a temple. He's not just an idol. The real God made this whole world. And this is the verse, you want to mark it down and go back and read it. It's Acts 14:16. Paul says that God gave a testimony about his existence in the creation itself. That when we look at the world around us, we can see the fingerprint, the language of God. A couple chapters later in the book of Acts, Paul goes to the famous philosophical city of Athens. And in Acts 17, he's taken up on top of Mars Hill, the Areopagus, and he's standing before the leaders of the city and the philosophers. And he's talking to them. They don't know about God either. They're worshiping all these pagan gods. And he starts to talk to them and explain to them. And finally, Acts 17:27, I think we can put this verse up on the screen. "His purpose was for the nations to seek after God and perhaps feel their way toward him and find him, though he is not far from any one of us." That's that famous line where Paul says, God's not that far away from you right now. You may not see him in this room, but what he wants for you to do is he wants you to look for him. He wants you to seek out for him, and he wants you to find him. Now, not everybody agrees with this. I mean, we could line up some of the world's great scientists today. And ever since the rise of Charles Darwin and Darwinian evolution in the 1800s, the world has been absolutely fixed by this idea that all of life as we know it, all of the world can be explained through processes, time and chance, natural selection. Today, biologists talk about the selfish gene, which I know about because we have kids, you know. It's a joke. But there's no doubt that Darwin was right about some things, right? I mean, there's no doubt that evolution happens at certain levels. I mean, it happens. But the origin of all species, the origin of all life, the origin of all things, I mean, really? We can detect all of that? I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced that science has explained the origin of everything. I think some of it's true, but I don't know about the origin. I kind of feel like the guy that told the story about the UC Berkeley professor, the University of California Berkeley professor. He taught biology, and he was an atheist. And he went in the men's bathroom, and someone had graffitied on the wall a poem about evolution. Once I was a tadpole beginning to begin. Then I was a frog with my tail tucked in. Next I was a monkey in a banyan tree. And now I'm a professor with a PhD. I mean, there's some leaps there, isn't there? And that's the part of the problem, isn't it? Is how do we explain all of the things? I don't have time this morning, and you wouldn't want to hear it. All of the arguments, all of the reasons for why it's so hard to believe that everything just came about by time and chance. But today, the prevailing theory of all science is called the Big Bang Theory, that everything came from one initial explosion. But the question, Francis Collins asks it in this book, that the science can never answer, is where did that come from? And what happened before that? And then he goes into all the details of how the universe has all these constants and all this organization and all this design. And everywhere in the universe, it's like that. And he says, no, there's no way we can just explain that as time and random chance. There has to be, if there's a big bang, a big banger. If there's a movement in the universe, there's got to be a prime mover. If there's a cause, there has to be a first cause. So we look through the telescope tonight, and we see the starry night. And we look through the microscope, and we see cells and molecules. And we see the brilliance of intelligence and design and the fine-tuning of our universe. And we have to say and ask the question, isn't there a fine-tuner out there? You know, the oldest illustration of this is the watch. Imagine you're walking through the forest one day. I don't know why you would be walking through the forest, but just imagine you were. And you came across a watch, and you know, you picked it up, and it was gold and a beautiful band. And as you looked at it, it was crusted with diamonds, and written on it was Rolex. No one on earth would pick that up and go, I think that happened by time and chance. Now, by time, maybe, you know, that's kind of a joke there, but. But we would all know that someone dropped it. It's just the way it is. When I was walking through Target yesterday morning, there was a person walking through the Target, and they had on their T-shirt a picture of Mount Rushmore. We can put a picture of Mount Rushmore. I've never seen it. I've never been there in person. Some of you have, but it's in South Dakota. There's 600-foot sculpted faces of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Theodore Roosevelt, and Abraham Lincoln. Can you imagine standing there looking at that and someone next to you saying, wow, what an accident. Erosion formed it. An earthquake must have done it. What an amazing earthquake to have done that. No. 2,000 years from now, people, if the Lord tarries, are going to look at that and go, we know a sculptor sculpted it. We know a creator created it. And when we look at the world around us, one of the ways God shows himself to us is in our natural world through general natural revelation. Here's another way God makes himself known. Number two, God makes himself known by what Paul calls his divine nature or divine power. Now, we all know the biblical story is that God made humanity, made us in his own image. And there's part of us that reflects God. Now, I'm not talking about New Age and the spark of the divine. I mean that there's part of God's character that's inside of us. It's his character. And part of this is the way we see the world and understand right and wrong. And we call this conscience. Why is it that since the beginning of all recorded history, people have always had a sense of right and wrong? This is Paul's explanation. It's there on your outline. We can put it on the screen. It's in Romans chapter 2. Paul says that even Gentiles who do not have God's written law show that they know his law when they instinctively obey it, even without not having heard it. They demonstrate that God's law is written on their hearts, for their own conscience and thoughts either accuse them or tell them that what they're doing is right or wrong. That everybody on this earth has a conscience, has a sense of right and wrong, and part of that is because we were created in God's image. Moral compasses are something that all people have always had. Did you know that before the Bible was ever written, there were laws written down? Moses received the commandments in about 1500 B.C. In 2, 3, 4,000 B.C., the first writings of all time were moral laws. One of the oldest moral laws, I think we can show a picture of it. Do you have that picture? Of the Egyptian hieroglyphs. And they're translating these hieroglyphs, and guess what they say? Don't steal. Don't kill. I mean, the laws that we operate under, why is it that we think stealing is wrong? Why don't we steal rather than work? Why do we believe that peace is better than war? Why do we believe that love is better than hate? All civilizations that have ever lived have had laws, even atheist countries. C.S. Lewis wrote a book called The Abolition of Man, and he was making the argument that there are moral absolutes. And at the end of the book, he chronicled all the ancient laws and all the ancient cultures, the Jewish, the Christian, the Hindu, the Norse, the Babylonian, the Egyptian, the Aboriginal, the Chinese, the Greek, the Roman. And then he showed, one by one, how all of the moral laws that we have today were always in existence. Why is it? How do we explain that all people have this sense of right and wrong if it's survival of the fittest? If it's just all by natural selection, shouldn't we be stealing rather than following? Shouldn't we be more concerned about ourselves, our selfish genes, than loving other people? No, we were made with a conscience, and God makes himself known to us through that conscience. But there's another way God makes himself known, and it's not in the natural world. And we're not going to find it by just looking inside of ourselves. It's only going to happen when, by a leap of faith, by a moment of divine interaction with God, that we can discover him, that we can know him. And this is the third way God makes himself known, and we call it supernaturally. It's beyond the natural understanding of all of this. And for those of us who are Christians, we like to call this salvation. There's different words for it. You could call it conversion. You could call it, you know, whatever you like. There's a lot of biblical words for it. But it's a moment in our lives where it's not just, okay, there is a God, but now I know that God personally, and I've experienced that God. I'm going to tell you about Paul one more time. Did you know that Paul knew the Bible backwards and forwards? Did you know that he was a faithful follower of God? And one day he was trying to do what he thought God wanted him to do, and he met Jesus. And for the first time in his life, he realized that he had known God, he had followed God's laws and God's rules, but he had never met God. And on that day that he met him, his life was forever changed. He wrote about it in his own autobiographical statement in the book of Galatians, chapter 1, verse 15. He says, "But when God, who set me apart from my mother's womb and called me by his grace, was pleased to reveal his son in me." That happened on the road to Damascus. He saw that blinding light. "God was pleased to reveal his son in me so that I might preach him among the Gentiles. And my immediate response was not to consult with any human being." There was a moment in Paul's life where God showed himself to him. Now, a lot of us in this room, we might say, we know this book. We know about moral things. But that's not enough. There has to be that moment where that leap of faith takes place, from which we meet and we encounter the real God. Not just knowing him, but knowing him. I was intrigued this week by the story of a woman born in Alabama in the 1800s, born along one of the biggest rivers there. As a child, everything was fine. You know, she was born healthy. The doctor said everything's okay. 19 months old, she gets sick. Her infection grows, her brain swells, and she loses the ability to see and the ability to hear. Can you imagine today if you couldn't see or hear? And for months and for years, her life begins to progress. When she's 6 years old, her parents are so concerned about her. They want to figure out a way that she can learn to communicate. So they take her to see Alexander Graham Bell. You know, the phone and all the discoveries of Alexander Graham. He was inventing this thing called sign language. But she couldn't even see, so they had to just take her hands, and they would take her hands and they would teach her all these ways of communicating just with her hands. She learned really quickly. She learned her hand, then she learned Braille. By the age of 10, she learned how to type. I mean, she was just really growing and really learning. And so her parents said, you need to go to college. And she got a scholarship. She couldn't see, she couldn't hear. She got a scholarship to go to Radcliffe University. Her professors took her aside and they taught with her by hand. And she graduated with honors. Helen Keller became one of the most noted celebrities of all time, although all of her life she was blind and deaf. Early on in her life, Alexander Graham Bell had her meet a woman named Anne Sullivan. And Anne was the woman who worked with her all those years and helped her. Anne had become a Christian. And Anne was so concerned that this beautiful young woman would live her life in the darkness, not seeing or hearing and never knowing about Jesus Christ, that she contacted one of the most famous preachers in all of America in those days, Phillips Brooks. And Phillips Brooks and Helen Keller began to have a conversation through letters and Braille, and some of those letters are still intact. You can look them up on the internet. I mean, it's crazy. And in the conversations, Phillips Brooks was explaining to Helen Keller, there is a God, there's a creator, there's a savior named Jesus, and explaining the whole thing to her. And this is what Helen Keller said. Oh, Phillip Brooks, I know him. I have known him for many years. I just didn't know his name. Thank you for telling me the full truth. Helen Keller wrote her own spiritual autobiography. She talked about how all of her life she was living in the darkness. She said, but all that time she was in the darkness, she said, I was never alone. There was always someone there with me. I just didn't know who it was. Well, isn't that what Paul is saying here in Romans chapter 1? That this invisible God, you can't see him with your eyes, you can't hear him with your ears. But he is making himself known today. Some of us have been looking with our eyes, we've been looking with our ears. But what we really need to do is we need to listen to that still small voice, that God that would reveal himself to us, that God who's always been there with us. Seek him. Find him. Explore God today.